coming to ask about the head from which the newspapers had fallen, and which was now slippery with blood in his naked hands, and he gave up and stood in the middle of the street in the red darkness and cursed the booming bell and the white people, and felt that he did not give a damn what happened to him, and when the people closed in, he hurled the bloody head squarely into their faces. Dong, dong, dong. He opened his eyes and looked about him in the darkened room, hearing a bell ring. He sat up. The bell sounded again. How long had it been ringing? He got to his feet, swaying from stiffness, trying to shake off sleep and that awful dream. Yosem, he mumbled. The bell rang again, insistently. He fumbled in the dark for the light chain and pulled it. Excitement quickened within him. Had something happened? Was this the police? Bigger! A muffled voice called. Yes, sir. He braced himself for whatever was coming and stepped to the door. As he opened it, he felt it being pushed in by someone who seemed determined to get in a hurry. Bigger backed away, blinking his eyes.
We want to talk to you, said Britton.
Yes, sir.
He did not hear what Britton said after that, for he saw, directly behind Britton, a face that made him hold his breath. It was not fear, he felt, but attention, a supreme gathering of all the forces of his body for a showdown.
Go on in, Mr. Erlone, Mr. Dalton said.
Bigger saw Jan's eyes looking at him steadily. Jan stepped into the room, and Mr. Dalton followed. Bigger stood with his lips slightly parted, his hands hanging loosely by his sides, his eyes watchful, but veiled.
Sit down, Erlone, Britton said.
This is all right, Jan said. I'll stand.
Bigger saw Britton pull from his coat pocket the packet of pamphlets and hold them under Jan's eyes. Jan's lips twisted into a faint smile.
Well, Jan said. You're one of those tough Reds, huh? Britton asked.
Come on, let's get this over with, Jan said.
What do you want?
Take it easy, Britton said. You got plenty of time. I know your kind. You like to rush and have things your way.
Bigger saw Mr. Dalton standing to one side, looking anxiously from one to the other. Several times Mr. Dalton made as if to say something, then checked himself, as though uncertain.
Bigger? Britton asked. Is this the man Miss Dalton brought here last night?
Jan's lips parted. He stared at Britton, then at Bigger.
Yelsa?
Bigger whispered, struggling to control his feelings, hating Jan violently because he knew he was hurting him, wanting to strike Jan with something because Jan's wide, incredulous stare made him feel hot guilt to the very core of him.
You didn't bring me here, Bigger, Jan said. Why do you tell them that?
Bigger did not answer. He decided to talk only to Britton and Mr. Dalton. There was silence. Jan was staring at Bigger. Britton and Mr. Dalton were watching Jan. Jan made a move toward Bigger, but Britton's arm checked him.
Say, what is this? Jan demanded. What are you making this boy lie for? I suppose you're going to tell us you weren't drunk last night, huh?
Asked Britton.
What business is that of yours? Jan shot at him. Where's Miss Dalton? Britton asked.
Jan looked round the room, puzzled.
She's in Detroit, he said.
You know your story by heart, don't you?
Britton said.
Say, Bigger, what are they doing to you? Don't be afraid, speak up, said Jan.
Bigger did not answer. He looked stonily at the floor.
Where did Miss Dalton tell you she was going? Britton asked.
She told me she was going to Detroit.
Did you see her last night?
Jan hesitated.
No. You didn't give these pamphlets to this boy last night.
Jan shrugged his shoulders, smiled, and said,
All right, I saw her. So what? You know why I didn't say so in the first place.
No. We don't know, Britton said.
Well, Mr. Dalton here doesn't like Reds, as you call him. And I didn't want to get Miss Dalton in trouble.
Then you did meet her last night.
Yes.
Where is she?
If she's not in Detroit, then I don't know where she is.
You gave these pamphlets to this boy?
Yes, I did.
You and Miss Dalton were drunk last night.
Oh, come on. We weren't drunk. We had a little to drink.
You brought her home about two?
Bigger stiffened and waited.
Yeah? You told the boy to take her trunk down to the basement?
Jan opened his mouth, but no words came. He looked at Bigger, then back to Britton.
Say, what is this?
Where's my daughter, Mr. Erlon? Mr. Dalton asked.
I tell you, I don't know.
Listen, let's be frank, Mr. Erlon, said Mr. Dalton. We know my daughter was drunk last night when you brought her here. She was too drunk to leave here by herself. Do you know where she is?
I didn't come here last night, Jan stammered.
Bigger sensed that Jan had said that he had come home with Mary last night, in order to make Mr. Dalton believe that he would not have left his daughter alone in a car with a strange chauffeur. And Bigger felt that after Jan admitted that they had been drinking, he was bound to say that he had brought the girl home. Unwittingly, Jan's desire to protect Mary had helped him. Jan's denial of having come to the home would not be believed now. It would make Mr. Dalton in Britain feel that he was trying to cover up something of even much greater seriousness.
You didn't come home with her?
Mr. Dalton asked.
No.
You didn't tell the boy to take the trunk down?
Hell no. Who says I did? I left the car and took a trolley home.
Jan turned and faced Bigger.
Bigger, what are you telling these people?
Bigger did not answer.
He's just told us what you did last night, Britton said.
Where's Mary? Where's Miss Dalton? Jan asked.
We're waiting for you to tell us, said Britton.
Didn't she go to Detroit? Jan stammered.
No, said Mr. Dalton.
I called her this morning and Peggy told me she had.
You called her just to see if the family had missed her, didn't you? Asked Britton.
Jan walked over to Bigger.
Leave him alone, Britton said.
Bigger, Jan said. Why did you tell these men I came here?
You say you didn't come here at all last night, Mr. Dalton asked again.
Absolutely not. Bigger, tell him when I left the car.
Bigger said nothing.
Come on, Erlon. I don't know what you're up to, but you've been lying ever since you've been in this room. You said you didn't come here last night, and then you said you did. You said you weren't drunk last night. Then you say you were. You said you didn't see Miss Dalton last night. Then you say you did. Come on now. Tell us where Miss Dalton is. Her father and mother want to know.
Bigger saw Jan's bewildered eyes.
Listen, I've told you all I know, said Jan, putting his hat back on. Unless you tell me what this joke's all about, I'm getting on back home.
Wait a minute, said Mr. Dalton. Mr. Dalton came forward a step and fronted Jan. You and I don't agree. Let's forget that. I want to know where my daughter is.
Is this a game? Asked Jan.
No, no, said Mr. Dalton. I want to know. I'm worried.
I tell you, I don't know.
Listen, Mr. Erlon,
Mary is the only girl we've got. I don't want her to do anything rash. Tell her to come back, or you bring her back.
Mr. Dalton, I'm telling you the truth.
Listen, Mr. Dalton said. I'll make it all right with you. Jan's face reddened.
What do you mean? He asked.
I'll make it worth your while.
You son...
Jan stopped. He walked to the door.
Let him go, said Britton. He can't get away. I'll phone and have him picked up. He knows more than he's telling.
Jan paused in the doorway, looking at all three of them. Then he went out. Bigger sat on the edge of the bed and heard Jan's feet run down the stairs. A door slammed, then silence. Bigger saw Mr. Dalton gazing at him queerly. He did not like that look. But Britton was jotting something on a pad, his face pale and hard in the yellow glare of the suspended electric bulb.
You're telling us the truth about all this, aren't you, Bigger?
Mr. Dalton asked.
Yes, sir.
He's all right, Britton said. Come on, let's get to a phone. I'm having that guy picked up for questioning. It's the only thing to do. And I'll have some men go over Miss Dalton's room. We'll find out what happened. I'll bet my right arm that goddamn Red's up to something.
Britton went out, and Mr. Dalton followed, leaving Bigger still on the edge of the bed. When he heard the door slam, he got up and grabbed his cap and went softly down the stairs into the basement. He stood a moment looking through the cracks into the humming fire, blindingly red now. Then he went into the driveway, through the falling snow, to the street. He had to see Bessie at once. The kidnap note had to be sent right away. There was no time to lose. If Mr. Dalton, Britton, or Peggy missed him and asked him where he had been, he would say that he had gone out to get a package of cigarettes. But with all of the excitement, no one would probably think of him. And they were after Jan now. He was safe.
Bigger!
He stopped, whirled, his hand reaching inside of his shirt for his gun. He saw Jan standing in the doorway of a store. As Jan came forward, Bigger backed away. Jan stopped.
For Christ's sakes, don't be afraid of me. I'm not going to hurt you.
In the pale yellow sheen of the street lamp, they faced each other. Huge wet flakes of snow floated down slowly, forming a delicate screen between them. Bigger had his hand inside of his shirt, on his gun. Jan stood staring, his mouth open.
What's all this about, Bigger? I haven't done anything to you, have I? Where's Mary?
Bigger felt guilty. Jan's presence condemned him. Yet he knew of no way to atone for his guilt. He felt he had to act as he was acting.
I don't want to talk to you, he mumbled.
But what have I done to you?
Jan asked desperately. Jan had done nothing to him, and it was Jan's innocence that made anger rise in him. His fingers tightened about the gun.
I don't want to talk to you, he said again.
He felt that if Jan continued to stand there and make him feel this awful sense of guilt, he would have to shoot him in spite of himself. He began to tremble all over. His lips parted, and his eyes widened.
Go away, Bigger said.
Listen, Bigger, if these people are bothering you, just tell me. Don't be scared. I'm used to this sort of thing. Listen now, let's go somewhere and get a cup of coffee and talk this thing over.
Jan came forward again, and Bigger drew his gun. Jan stopped. His face whitened.
For God's sake, man! What are you doing? Don't shoot! I haven't bothered you! Don't!
Leave me alone, Bigger said, his voice tense and hysterical. Leave me alone! Leave me alone!
Jan backed away from him. Leave me alone!
Bigger's voice rose to a scream. Jan backed farther away, then turned and walked rapidly off, looking back over his shoulder. When he reached the corner, he ran through the snow out of sight. Bigger stood still, the gun in hand. He had utterly forgotten where he was. His eyes were still riveted on that point in space where he had last seen Jan's retreating form. The tension in him slackened, and he lowered the gun until it hung at his side, loosely in his fingers. He was coming back into possession of himself. For the past 3 minutes, it seemed he had been under a strange spell, possessed by a force which he hated, but which he had to obey. He was startled when he heard soft footsteps coming toward him in the snow. He looked and saw a white woman. The woman saw him and paused. She turned abruptly and ran across the street. Bigger shoved the gun in his pocket and ran to the corner. He looked back. The woman was vanishing through the snow in the opposite direction. In him as he walked was a cold, driving will. He would go through with this. He would work fast. He had encountered in Jan a much stronger determination than he had thought would be there. If he sent the kidnap note, it would have to be done before Jan could prove that he was completely innocent. At that moment, he did not care if he was caught. If only he could cower Jan and Britain into awe, into fear of him and his black skin and his humble manners. He reached a corner and went into a drugstore. A white clerk came to him.
Give me an envelope, some paper, and a pencil, he said.
He paid the money, put the package into his pocket, and went out to the corner to wait for a car. One came. He got on and rode eastward, wondering what kind of note he would write. He rang the bell for the car to stop, got off, and walked through the quiet Negro streets. Now and then he passed an empty building, white and silent in the night. He would make Bessie hide in one of these buildings and watch for Mr. Dalton's car. But the ones he passed were too old. If one went into them, they might collapse. He walked on. He had to find a building where Bessie could stand in a window and see the package of money when it was thrown from the car. He reached Langley Avenue and walked westward to Wabash Avenue. There were many empty buildings with black windows like blind eyes, buildings like skeletons standing with snow on their bones in the winter winds, but none of them were on corners. Finally, at Michigan Avenue and East 36th Place, he saw the one he wanted. It was tall, white, silent, standing on a well-lighted corner. By looking from any of the front windows, Bessie would be able to see in all four directions.
Oh!
He had to have a flashlight. He went to a drugstore and bought one for a dollar. He felt in the inner pocket of his coat for his gloves. Now he was ready. He crossed the street and stood waiting for a car. His feet were cold, and he stamped them in the snow, surrounded by people waiting, too, for a car. He did not look at them. They were simply blind people, blind like his mother, his brother, his sister, Peggy, Britton, Jan, Mr. Dalton, and the sightless Mrs. Dalton, and the quiet, empty houses with their black, gaping windows. He looked round the street and saw a sign on a building. This property is managed by the Southside Real Estate Company. He had heard that Mr. Dalton owned the Southside Real Estate Company, and the Southside Real Estate Company owned the house in which he lived. He paid $8 a week for one rat-infested room. He had never seen Mr. Dalton until he had come to work for him. His mother always took the rent to the real estate office. Mr. Dalton was somewhere far away, high up, distant, like a god. He owned property all over the Black Belt, and he owned property where white folks lived, too. But Bigger could not live in a building across the line.
even though Mr. Dalton gave millions of dollars for Negro education. He would rent houses to Negroes only in this prescribed area, this corner of the city, tumbling down from rot. In a sullen way, Bigger was conscious of this. Yes.